TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. The Safe Food Movement versus Agrochemical Giants, Monsanto, Dow, DuPont, Syngenta, and more. With Vandana Shiva, Andy Kimbrell, and David Bronner, the renowned Indian physicist and seed collector with Navdanya, Vandana Shiva, and Andy Kimbrell, public interest attorney and executive director of the Center for Food Safety, came to the 2013 Heirloom Seed Expo in California. They gave an update on the status of labeling of GMOs and on the power plays behind the scenes, as the desire and demand to label genetically engineered food grows across the U.S., biotech companies such as Monsanto, Dow, DuPont, Syngenta, and Bayer are trying to pass federal and international rules that take away state rights to food labeling. At the same time, as you heard in part one of this program, several new herbicides and GMO plants and even engineered animals are in the approval process. As of the date of this program in March 2014, salmon, engineered with growth hormones, has come close to coming to market and be sold without labeling. Also, biotech corporations are now facing a huge problem of their own making, the so-called super weeds that have adapted to the multi-year dousing of Roundup on 50% plus of the corn and soy growing areas in the U.S. It's called herbicide resistance, and these super weeds can no longer be killed by Roundup. Super weeds are invading other industrial ag land and are spreading into gardens, parks, and organic farms. Instead of admitting that the widespread use of Roundup was a mistake and ending its use, Dow Chemical has reformulated a much more dangerous herbicide that will kill Roundup-resistant weeds. 2,4-D is half of the formula of Agent Orange that was sprayed over Vietnam as a defoliant. Andy Kimbrell from the Center for Food Safety reported at the Heirloom Expo in 2013 that 2,4-D is not the only highly toxic herbicide in the approval pipeline today. The other herbicides are dicamba and isoxaflutyl. Isoxaflutyl is an application by Bayer. It's an ancient and very damaging herbicide, which is already banned in 3 states in the U.S. Kimbrell calls this a chemical arms race going backwards, all to resolve a problem caused by the same industry that now wants to profit from their solution. However, Kimbrell predicts that at the end of the day, we're going to be where we are today. We will have weeds resistant to all of them, Roundup, 2,4-D, dicamba, and isoxaflutyl, and there will be no way to dispose of them. This, he said, is a disaster for American agriculture. The discussion then turned to the question why it is so hard for popular movements to enforce labeling of GMOs or to prevent the introduction of toxins. One basic problem was largely covered in part one. Attempts failed in the 1980s when these plants were first introduced. To pass legislation requiring mandatory safety testing, environmental testing, and labeling of GMOs because of the power of the biotech industry. So the U.S. is the only country among all our trading partners where there's not a single law passed by Congress on the environmental, health, or labeling transparency of GMOs. Not one. And as Kimbrell explained in part one, biotech corporations intend to keep this a lawless enterprise. One method by which to accomplish this is the revolving door. Kimbrell said, companies put their scientists into the EPA and USDA. They take their lawyers and put them in the FDA, a huge revolving door. Right now, the five major biotechnology companies have 116 lobbyists, 112 of whom were in Congress or in the agencies before becoming paid lobbyists. And in this program, you will hear about the case of Michael Taylor's astounding trip from Monsanto to the FDA, then to the USDA, back to Monsanto, and back to the FDA, and up to the White House as Obama's food czar. Also on the panel at the Heirloom Seed Expo was David Bronner. He's the CEO of his family company, Dr. Bronner Castile Soap, and became a major participant and donor in the campaigns to label GMO food. He graduated from Harvard with a biology degree. David Bronner.
The degree of regulatory capture of the regulating agencies is like unparalleled. Both parties are bought and paid for. They get their hand-picked regulators in there. They get, you know, Michael Taylor, whoever, who makes these key bogus findings like, oh, there's no material difference between, you know, insecticidal corn and regular corn. So that's basically the, you know, regulatory doublespeak logic that gets them out of all the mandatory safety testing and regulatory approval process. If you have an additive, if you say, oh, hey, I want to put BT on my food, right? The FDA is going to say, no, you've got to go through rigorous regulatory review. By making the finding of no material difference, they just basically bypass it and said, you don't got to do any of that. Monsanto, why don't you do some studies yourself and report what you find? And Monsanto unsurprisingly found, oh, this is fine. Another thing is, you know, oftentimes genetically engineered crops are sold as, oh, we need to feed the world, you know, with genetic engineering. And, you know, number one, like drought tolerance, right? That's a complete failure. That trait has just failed, like just like herbicide tolerance has failed. And you think about, well, what's a robust drought tolerant crop system? Well, that's organic. You know, that is like proven time and time again to be drought tolerant. And just in general, these agroecological principles of like planting, you know, knowing what plants to, you know, to plant as a perimeter to distract pests from your primary crops, and knowing proper rotations and composting, and all these agroecological principles that we know can feed the world sustainably. There's no profit. They're not patentable. This is knowledge intensive, right? So these chemical companies are completely against it. They just want these, like, you know, magic bullet chemical solutions. That's their business model. That's their mindset. So, I mean, it is this larger war of, you know, the agroecological movement against this, you know, chemical treadmill, chemical industry that basically was like, you know, came from the war industry and decided, oh, hey, there's billions to be made with this, you know, short-term herbicide-tolerant business model.
That was David Bronner, CEO of Dr. Bronner Soap Company and major participant and donor in the campaigns to label GMO food. Andy Kimbrell, public interest attorney, then added the legal perspective to David Bronner's comment about no material difference. I transcribed what Kimbrell had to say because the sound from the PA system was so bad. Kimbrell said that in 1992, the FDA issued a policy, not a regulation. They did that because they didn't want to be sued. The person who made that clever choice and formulated the policy was Michael Taylor, former attorney for Monsanto. He wrote that GMO crops are substantially equivalent to other crops and therefore did not require any additional environmental testing or mandatory labeling. This 1992 policy still is in place today. Michael Taylor then switched over to the USDA, where he was administrator of the Food Safety and Inspection Service. Then he went back to Monsanto as vice president. He's now back with the FDA as deputy commissioner for food, and he was appointed food czar for the Obama White House. This is the food policy we're still working under, and it basically says that all these additives and cell invasions would be considered safe in perpetuity without testing and labeling. That all began in 1992. Here's the moderator, Dan Imhoff. Imhoff has written for 20 years on topics related to ecological sustainability.
So when you hear terms like generally regarded as safe, that means that they do not have to submit any health or epidemiological studies. They're approvable without health studies. Now, right in the heat of the Prop 37 campaign last fall, a study was released by a French biologist named Seralini. It was really the first epidemiological study on biotech crops ever submitted. And it immediately took heat as being just a really poorly conducted study. But I'm wondering, Vandana, can you walk us through that study? Because it seems to be seminal, and health officials around the country are recognizing it as a very, very valuable, important move forward in understanding GMOs and health.
The first couple of minutes of the response by Vandana Shiva were distorted by the PA system, so I'm paraphrasing. Shiva said that Dr. Seralini used to be an official biosafety expert for the French government. He realized that so many applications coming before the agency were inadequate, so he decided to go back to research. He saw a feeding study by Monsanto with rats that showed early indication of both kidney and liver damage in those 90-day studies. Monsanto then ended the study and determined there was no effect. Dr. Seralini, however, decided to use the same type of animals, protocol, and feeding ingredients, but continue the study for 2 years. At the end of those 2 years, the harmful results were so obvious that the study became an international affair. Here the operator of the PA system turned on the correct microphone, and you can hear Vandana Shiva directly. Here she is.
Normally what they do is compare rats which have been fed GMOs or whatever has to be tested and rats that have not been fed GMOs. And his studies had very detailed data on how the genetically engineered products were leading to very high levels of tumors in the sample where the rats were eating GMOs. The first attack on him was he used the wrong rats. But everyone uses those same rats because there's one species that is good for lab studies. Then he was attacked for using too few numbers. His numbers were 5 to 10 times more than what Monsanto had used and what are typically used. They tried everything under the sun. The European Food Safety Authority did a bid, and now they've had to admit that the methodology he used was perfect. Two more pieces of very vital information. The European Food Safety Authority independently found that GMOs have a viral fragment that's very long. And independently in health studies, they have found that this extra length is always implicated in cancer. Those kind of studies aren't being done in the United States because of that substantial equivalence principle. And I remember it's being passed because 92 President Bush Sr. comes back from Rio refusing to sign the Convention on Biological Diversity, saying I won't let my 50 billion biotechnology industry be hurt, comes back. And I've always joked about this. Dan Quayle, who couldn't spell potato, could spell substantial equivalent because he didn't spell it anyway, Monsanto did. All of this, how did we get to become so driven by the GMO machinery? Because in the 80s, corporations like Monsanto realized that through genetic engineering, they can own the seed. And their highest profiteering would be out of royalty collection and rent collection. We are living in an economic time where work is disappearing and work is not sustaining. All of America not getting living wages, the big movements here. The overall economy of the US is an economy of rent collection. You outsourced everything to China. There's a very good Forbes study, Why Uncle Sam Loves Frankenfoods. It was a one-page graph, nothing more. On everything, the US has a trade deficit, except agribusiness and IPR royalties. But the problem is the days when you could say what's good for General Motors is good for America is long over. What's good for Monsanto is not good for American citizens or the American land. And I think one of the most serious challenges of democracy here, but as a consequence all over the world, is the White House somehow still lives in a political economy that what's good for the corporations is good for America, even if it means driving farmers off the land, driving manufacturing overseas. But at the end of it, they want to collect rents. And Monsanto had the biggest hand in writing the WTO agreement on intellectual property. They said, we were the patient, diagnostician, and physician all in one. We defined a problem, and the problem they defined was that farmers save seeds. We offered a solution, and the solution was now criminalize the saving of seed. If I make the effort to come to the Heirloom Expo. So the corporations kind of want a schizophrenic world. They want no regulation for GMOs and hyper-regulation for gardeners and farmers. I was told a child's garden was uprooted the other day in the United States. We know everywhere laws are being framed to criminalize seed saving. But within the corporate world, there's a schizophrenia. When it comes to owning the seed, they say we've made something new. When it comes to running away from regulation and accountability, they say substantial equivalent, just like nature made it. Now, you can't have one world for owning and one world for irresponsibility. It's one world we live in. I think we need to go beyond the propaganda spin. There's nothing more than that. We feed the world. The first myth is they produce more food, which they don't. They don't produce food at all.
Well, this is true. One of the main uses, really, of GMO crops to this point has been to feed animals in confinement.
You know, and also, I think we were just looking this up. We're at 43% of corn acreage is now going into ethanol. So the same interest behind these ridiculous ethanol mandates. You know, we shouldn't be making fuel out of corn kernels, you know, maybe waste straw, when and if that happens. But corn kernels, I mean, the energy return is nothing. I mean, it's just such a boondoggle. And then they're saying, oh, we're trying to feed the world at the same time. They're the force behind these ethanol subsidies that is whipsawing world food prices and you know, exacerbating world hunger.
The last voice was David Brauner addressing Vandana Shiva's comments on the myth of feeding the world. And then Andy Kimbrell added a pithy comment that was badly recorded. He said, if you add the ethanol and the factory farm feeding, about 96% of the corn grown in the U.S. goes into cars and cattle. The same with soy. About 95% of soy goes into cars and chicken feed. You're feeding the animal factories and the cars. You are not feeding anyone else. That's the myth of feeding the world. Such hypocrisy. Then Andy Kimbrell added a very important and even entertaining comment to the Seralini affair. I hope you will put up with a sound that, again, is not well captured on the PA system. So bear with me. This is a bad-sounding but intriguing detective story told by Andy Kimbrell.
Monsanto keeps all of its tests hidden, but Greenpeace Europe sued the European Food Safety Agency saying, this is genetically engineered corn from Monsanto that's got BT and HT in it. We want to know what those feeding studies look like. It took them years. They finally won in court. That is the material they gave to Seralini. Seralini noted that there was early indications of both kidney and liver damage in this 90-day study. As Vandana was saying, that's all they did was the 90-day study. He said, what if I do a full 2-year study? So he took exactly the same protocol as Monsanto had used, which he had to. He was going to redo their tests, but not for 90 days, but for 2 years. And what he suspected came true. There was significant liver damage, significant kidney damage. It was a toxicological study, not a cancer study. And then to his shock, what he saw, both with the herbicide and the GMOs, was huge benign tumors coming up in the animals that were having the GMOs. That was an unexpected result. So when people attacked this as a cancer study, it was never a cancer study. It was a toxicological study done exactly as Monsanto had done, except instead of for 90 days, 2 years, and we did find significant kidney and liver damage. And another thing he did was he did this full year, 2 year study on the herbicide Roundup itself. 2 year study with rats of the Roundup. And the whole formula, not just glyphosate, the whole formula, he found, again, tremendous organ damage and these tumors. This was the first time ever in the history of the world that anyone had done a whole formula, 2 year feeding study on any pesticide. We only do 90-day studies on the active ingredient in the United States and most companies around the world. So not only is this a great GMO study, it is the first study ever to do a full 2 year feeding study on a pesticide. We should be doing it on every pesticide out there. It is a disgrace for this to do that. That's why another reason they hate this study so much. Then as Bono was saying, there's this total schizophrenia, right? Because Monsanto goes to the patent office and it has 37 different patents on its HT crops. And you can only get a patent if something is novel, right? Never done before. And so they said to the, as they correctly to the patent office, hey, this is novel, no one's ever done it before. We're putting all these virus, bacteria vectors, novel genetic material in these crops and therefore in these foods, and every cell of these foods, and we want a patent. Then they go over to the FDA, the EPA, the USDA, they say there's nothing new here. Absolutely the same.
Yeah.
And so we unfortunately, we lost in 2002 in a case where we said you cannot patent plants at all. And then earlier this year, we were very supportive of the Bowman case where a farmer said, okay, you had patent for the first generation, but you can't have patents on all the generations in perpetuity for 20 years. This is a living organism. It's not some kind of machine. The Supreme Court needs an education in agronomy. They didn't get it. But fortunately, we initiated a case called the Myriad case, which had to do with a gene that's been associated with breast cancer. And a company had patented that gene, and therefore any woman trying to get a breast cancer test had to pay $2,000 or $3,000 for that test because they had the patent on it. We said, that's ridiculous. This is like a $60 test. And so we went to the Supreme Court, and this time we won. And they said that DNA is a product of nature and cannot be patented. So DNA is no longer patentable in the United States of America. Then the court said, but there's this thing when they copy DNA, they use synthetic DNA for a lot of, including biotechnology, agricultural biotechnology, and the court said, that seems to us obvious, which means it shouldn't be patented. But since it wasn't one of the things that was, you know, in this case, they said that when we get in another case to decide whether synthetic DNA is patentable or not, we're going to be bringing that case, and I think they're going to find that obvious. So I don't think they're going to be able to patent DNA or synthetic DNA in the U.S. Patent Office. So it's a very good and revolutionary time, and then we can extend that not just to humans, of course. There's no difference between all living things' DNA, so I'm sure that will be a no patenting of any DNA of anything on Earth. So at least that's a start to getting rid of the patenting of life, which is a ridiculous, incoherent legal concept anyway.
That was Andy Kimball. He's a public interest attorney on behalf of food safety, and we owe it to him and his interventions up to the Supreme Court that we're not already eating salmon engineered with growth hormones or tomatoes with fish genes. Kimbrell is an author and executive director of the Center for Food Safety. Vandana Shiva trained in quantum physics and became a seed saver and ecologist in 1982. She and her organization, Navdanya, resist the spread of GMOs into India. For Vandana Shiva, the imposition of GMOs is a war on life and the most recent wave of colonialism against her home country, India. David Bronner is CEO of his family company, Dr. Bronner Castile Soap, and became a major participant and donor in the campaigns to label GMO food. He has a degree in biology from Harvard. So, just to drive home the point how determined the biotech companies are to write the law and keep their products from being tested, here's a postscript to the Seralini affair. Less than 3 months after Shiva's and Kimbrell's talk, a piece of shocking news made the rounds in the media. On November 28, 2013, it was reported that the journal Food and Chemical Toxicology retracted the Seralini paper that it had published in 2012. That paper stated that genetically modified corn causes serious disease in rats. The editor said explicitly that the research group led by Seralini showed no evidence of fraud or intentional misrepresentation, but that the small number and type of animals used in the study meant that no definitive conclusion can be reached. Seralini protested in a press conference and said that he and his team stand by their results. The allegation was made that the forced retraction had to do with the journal's editorial appointment of biologist Richard Goodman. Goodman previously had worked for 7 years for the biotechnology giant Monsanto. A sizable group of scientists and writers protested the decision. They say that legitimate peer reviewers had recommended the paper for publication in 2012, and they raised questions as to the expertise, balance, and objectivity of the anonymous review panel that had demanded the retraction. Many pointed to the Goodman factor. The position of associate editor for biotechnology at the journal Food and Chemical Toxicology had been especially created for him. And the Seralini paper was not the only retraction from the journal. After Goodman was installed, the journal withdrew a study by Brazilian researchers that also raised questions about GM crop safety. The Brazilian paper, like Professor Seralini's, had been peer-reviewed and published by Food and Chemical Toxicology prior to Goodman's arrival. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. You can get information on how to order a CD at cost of the one-hour program on The Safe Food Movement versus Agrochemical Giants by calling 1-707-463-2654. You can also place an order on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation on TUC's website keeps this program on the air. That's tucradio.org or 707-463-2654 for more information. My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.